Kia ora. This program is brought to you by Wellington Access Radio. Get your voice heard.
Welcome to the Alcoholics Anonymous meeting on air. My name's Rebecca and I'm an alcoholic and chairperson for today's meeting. We open AA meetings with the Serenity Prayer, and I invite you to join me, please. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other, that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organisation or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither opposes nor endorses any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. Thanks everybody for joining us for the Wellington AA meeting on air and Wellington Access Radio 106.1 FM. This morning we've got a group from as Bill sees it meeting, and it's held in Wellington in Te Aro. Wednesday's 5:30. Now, I'm going to get Dan to kick off by reading from How It Works. Good morning, Dan.
Thanks, Rebecca. I'm Dan, I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Dan.
Chapter 5, How It Works. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Those who do not recover are people who cannot or will not completely give themselves to this simple program. Usually men and women who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. There are such unfortunates. They are not at fault. They seem to have been born that way. They are naturally incapable of grasping and developing a manner of living which demands rigorous honesty. Their chances are less than average. There are those too who suffer from grave emotional and mental disorders, but many of them do recover if they have the capacity to be honest. Our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, and what we are like now. If you have decided you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you are ready to take certain steps. At some of these we balked. We thought we could find an easier, softer way, but we could not. With all the earnestness at our command, we beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. Some of us have tried to hold on to our old ideas, and the result was nil until we let go absolutely. Remember that we deal with alcohol, cunning, baffling, powerful. Without help, it is too much for us, but there is one who has all power. That one is God. May you find him now. Half measures availed us nothing. We stood at the turning point. We asked his protection and care with complete abandon. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. 1. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. 4. Made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5. Admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6. Were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7. Humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. 8. Made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9. Made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. Continued to take personal inventory and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Many of us exclaimed, "What an order, I can't go through with it." Do not be discouraged. No one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. We are not saints. The point is that we are willing to grow along spiritual lines. The principles we have set down are guides to progress. We claim spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. Our description of the alcoholic, the chapter to the agnostic, and our personal adventures before and after makes clear three pertinent ideas. A, that we were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives. B, that probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism. And C, that God could and would if he were sought.
Thanks, Dan, for reading that. You're listening to the AA meeting on air, Wellington Access Radio 106.1 FM. There are other ways to find out about what's going on with AA in New Zealand. We've got a fantastic website, aa.org.nz, full of handy resources. Now I'm going to pass over to Dave to give us a reading from As Bill Sees It, which is the general format of this meeting at 5:30 on Wednesdays in Te Aro in Wellington. So over to you, Dave.
Thanks, Rebecca. I'm Dave. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi.
So As Bill Sees It meeting draws its name from the AA-approved publication called As Bill Sees It, The AA Way of Life, and the book is selected writings of AA's co-founder, Bill Wilson. So I opened the book towards the back, something that rang a few bells for me from back in my drinking days. Page 267, for those of you that have got a copy in front of you, behind our excuses. As excuse makers and rationalisers, we drunks are champions. It is the business of the psychiatrist to find the deeper causes for our conduct. Though uninstructed in psychiatry, we can, after a little time in AA, see that our motives have not been what they thought they were, and that we've been motivated by forces previously unknown to us. Therefore, we ought to look with the deepest respect, interest, and profit upon the example set us by psychiatry. And he goes on to say, spiritual growth through the practice of AA's 12 steps, plus the aid of a good sponsor, can usually reveal most of the deeper reasons for our character defects, at least to a degree that meets our practical needs. Nevertheless, we should be grateful that our friends in psychiatry have so strongly emphasised the necessity to search for false and often unconscious motivations. It's a real mouthful, but it sums me up to a T. In my drinking days, I was a gunner. I was going to do this and I was going to do that. And then there was the internal guilt and remorse and the wonderment of all those great intentions just never even got started, because I couldn't see that I'd convinced myself that somehow I would fold alcohol into the mix of the planning and execution. And not realising that I was a problem drinker, as soon as I added alcohol to my life, the importance of the alcohol overtook everything else that I was doing. And when I put it like that, it's, you realise that you have a problem with alcohol. But when I was deep in the thick of it, I had every justification in the world why, if your life was like mine, you'd drink like I did. And, it was only by pure chance that one day I came into contact with somebody from AA, and that person from AA said, well, look, you know, if you want to understand what goes on in my head, how about you come to a meeting with me? there was nothing in there about your drinking as a problem, or you talk about a lot of things and do very, very little, or anything like that. It was purely come along and have a look. So, yeah, I rocked along to beginner's group one night with no defences, because normally somebody tells you that your drinking isn't right, all the shields go up, you're in defence mode, and, you know, the internal denial just protects you from any truth that follows. But I wasn't in that mode, and I went to this meeting and I listened to these people that were talking about what it was like, and I could really relate to what it was like. You know, they actually suffered from the same things as I did, and I'd never met them, and I hadn't known the person that took me along to the meeting for that long, so nobody could have primed them up as to, you know, what went on in my head and the things that I thought and the stuff that I suffered and the stuff that bugged me. But these people were talking about it. And then they were talking about what they did about it and claimed that they weren't plagued by these troubles anymore. And yeah, that was enough for me to come back the next week and the next week and the next week, still under the guise of supporting this friend of mine. But eventually it came to the stage where, with a little bit of help, and a bit of a push and a shove, I put down my last drink. And, you know, that was a long time ago. But since then, I guess the denial's cleared. And, you know, every year you celebrate your drinking anniversary, or non-drinking anniversary, really, you know. You have a belly button birthday, and if you're lucky enough to have been around in recovery for a while, you have an AA birthday as well. And on your AA birthday, you share your experience, strength and hope, what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now that you're not drinking. And I haven't had a drink for a little while now, and I can tell you that my drinking story has evolved as I've become more sober. You know, in early recovery, it was just a white-knuckle journey of, you know, all these triggers around me where something would happen and I'd go and have a drink. Well, that wasn't a thing anymore because I didn't drink. So something would happen and I'd have to deal with the raw sore consequences of how that affected me. And as sobriety unfolded, I guess I got better and better at these things. And looking back now, I can see why I drank, and I can see why I drank so destructively. And I guess the best part about it for me is that doesn't make it wrong or anything like that. It just wasn't right. And now that I'm not drinking, and I've had an opportunity through the 12 steps and under the guidance of a range of sponsors, one at a time, I've had a chance to clean up that wreckage of the past so it doesn't weigh so heavily on my shoulders. And I think it's the cleaning up that wreckage of the past and getting rid of that weight on my shoulders that's improved my defence against the first drink, because I don't carry around that emotional and psychological baggage that I had crushing me when I walked in the door. So, yeah, for those of you out there that have stumbled across this as a podcast or something like that, just try not drinking. You know, you'll go mad. And then come along to AA and talk to some people that have also been there and, you know, had a go and maybe got a few days under their belt. So that's enough from me anyway. Thanks, folk.
Thanks, Dave, for that. If you are listening to this and you are not sure if you have a problem with alcohol or not, a good place to look also is our AA Aotearoa New Zealand website. That's aa.org.nz. We have an 0800 number that, you know, the phone line is answered 24/7. It's 0800 229 6757. That's AA Works. And it's all staffed by, it's all run by fellows in AA. A great place to go for a bit of non-judgmental support and, maybe some tips on where a good meeting is to go and check out. So now you're listening, by the way, to the AA meeting on air, Wellington Access Radio 106.1 FM. I'm going to pass over to Chelsea to share.
Thank you, Rebecca. My name's Chelsea. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Chelsea.
Hello, everyone. Yes, really enjoyed your sharing, Dave. And I was lucky enough as well to be, to have the fact that I might have a drinking problem suggested to me. It's not something that came to me on my own. In fact, it was a massive surprise to me because I thought my drinking was completely rational and possibly not normal, but certainly not problematic. And so it came from outside of me, this idea that there might be an issue going on. And the defences did go up, exactly as you described. And I thought, I'm only 19 years old. Everyone drinks like me. I'm at university. Everyone drinks like me. But the idea must have bedded in, because it wasn't too long after that I was walking along the road between classes, and I saw that the blue triangle of AA, and I just found myself walking into a meeting. It just happened to be a meeting that I was walking past, and I went in and I sat down. And as I sat there, much like Dave's experience, I heard people talking about drinking the way I had been drinking. And it was a real moment of honesty for me, because it forced me to reflect on the way I had been drinking and the effects it had been having on me and on others. And it had got to a point where excuse making and rationalisation, as the reading mentioned, were a huge part of it for me. I took one of my first drinks when I was at university, so I was a reasonably late starter, but upon taking that drink, I felt completely different, in a good way. I felt confident. I felt that I could look other people in the eye. I could approach people and be part of group conversations instead of those thoughts plaguing my head: you don't belong here, you're not smart enough, you're not bright enough. And all those thoughts were gone, and it was replaced by this confidence. And I thought, this is amazing. This is exactly what I've been missing. And so I resolved quite clinically to continue drinking. And the drinking, but because I happened to be an alcoholic and I didn't know it at the time, the drinking escalated from there and became a dependence very, very quickly. Not just a physical dependence, but also a real mental preoccupation with it, to the point where I would wake up in the morning and if there was no alcohol around, I would be struck by this heart-clutching sort of fear. And my mind, above all other things, was focused on, where is the next drink coming from? Do I have enough in my flat to keep me going? Do I have enough money to get the next one? Who can I manipulate, essentially, to get my next drink if I get into trouble? And that was what it was entirely about for me. And all of those behaviours came to front of mind when I sat in this meeting. I thought, holy moly, this is really becoming a thing. And I wish I could say that that was the big turning point for me and I stopped drinking from that point and life's been la la ever since, but it's not the case. I wasn't ready to give it up, and that's because what they talk about in this reading in terms of the deeper causes of our conduct, for me, through doing work in AA and working with others, I found that deeper cause for my conduct was this complete life-altering fear of people, places, things, everything. And it was that fear that I really needed to confront in order to help loosen the grip alcohol had on me. It is scary when you first stop. The AA birthdays Dave talked about, mine's coming up this week, and it will be 24 years since my last drink this week. And that's worth celebrating, because for me it means not only did I make that initial step to stopping and I confronted the fear that came with that. I worked with others, but also I've continued on a mostly daily basis to do those small bits of work that require me to stay sober and experience the gratitude that comes with not having those issues anymore. I don't wake up anymore and think, what did I do last night? Or I was listening to a podcast this week and someone was talking about how good it is to not have to piece together your night by looking at your text messages or getting stories from other people or looking at your FPOS receipts, your bank statements, to sort of piece together what happened the night before. I used to wake up with this feeling of, who have I upset this time? Because I had this, I was so selfish in my drinking, I would behave literally whatever way I wanted to, whether it was speaking openly about my feelings on a matter that I knew would upset people, or that person's got a boyfriend, I feel like having that boyfriend, I'll just jump on that boyfriend, or disappearing and not saying goodbye to people, so worrying my loved ones by just not being there, all these sorts of things, and then I'd upset people and have to confront that the next day, which would usually involve apologising profusely and then continuing the behaviour in the evening. I don't have to deal with that anymore. I wake up in the morning and at best I'm a bit grumpy and I want a cup of coffee. That's a vastly better way to live my life than the way I was before. So I'm really, really grateful for that. I'm grateful for this meeting and my home group where we come from today. I've been at the same home group now for almost 14 years, and that having a home group plus having a sponsor have been two of the key parts for me of keeping me growing and honest and building a network around me of sober people, so I don't have that fear anymore. I know I'm all right, and I know I will be all right tomorrow. So I'll leave it there. Thanks.
Thanks, Chelsea.
Thanks, Chelsea. You're listening to AA On Air on Wellington Access Radio 106.1 FM. Yet another way of getting in touch with AA in New Zealand is we've got an email helpline, which is just help@aa.org.nz. People will get back to you, organise maybe for someone to come and talk to you about AA, maybe take you to a meeting. So the hand of AA is always there to help if you think you or someone you love might need to look at their drinking. I'm going to ask Dan to share now.
Thanks, Rebecca. I'm Dan, I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Dan.
Hi, Dan.
And this is my home group as well. So as Bill sees it, hasn't always been my home group, but has been for the last few years. And I guess a home group is like, you know, for me is that one meeting a week that I always attend. I attend other ones, but the home group is the one which I always attend unless I'm out of town so it's kind of like that's my one anchor to AA that I plan other bits of my life around that meeting to make sure that I, you know, if I'm, I need to do something on a Wednesday night, I will arrange for it to happen after the meeting or before the meeting. And one of the nice things about my home group is that we all go out for dinner afterwards. And that's where the meeting after the meeting happens. So that's, this home group's very special to me. That was a great reading about being excuse makers and rationalizers, and also about psychiatry and how professionals outside of AA can help us. And it says somewhere else in the big book that, you know, that AA doesn't have an issue with, you know, doctors or psychiatrists. In fact, it's actually good to listen to them because they can offer us a lot of help. That's sort of a paraphrasing of that. But for me, as an active drinker, I was never honest with my doctor about how much I was drinking. I had the same doctor for quite a long time, and I've still got the same doctor now. And I'm sure he knew that, like, you know, I wasn't telling the exact truth. I mean, like, about how much I was drinking. And I think any amount per week that I told him, if you doubled it or tripled it, that'd be more accurate. So I always try to play it down. Oh yeah, I'm not drinking as much as what you might think I am. And I was even sometimes I would give him like the amount, which was like a third of what it was, and he'd say, "Well, that's a lot." And I'd go, you'd hate to know what what the real amount is. So my drinking did cause me a lot of issues as well, like early on in my life as a teenager, and I got into quite a lot of trouble. And I actually was recommended that I went to see a psychiatrist. And I don't remember really much about it, but whether I was completely honest with the psychiatrist or not, probably not. But I had one session, and the psychiatrist referred me to a social worker. So I spent all these, maybe 6 months having sessions with a social worker who basically was trying to work out how I could, not drink as much, because that seemed to be like the root of my problems. But I never got referred to AA or anything like that. I knew vaguely about it, but didn't really follow up on it So, and eventually I got into even more trouble and... That's when I went to my first AA meeting, and I went because I was in a lot of trouble, and I thought, well, if I go to this meeting and I attend other meetings and other courses and things to get people off my back, then it would make me look good. So I never went along with the intention, I need to stop drinking. I was only 20 years old, and the drinking age in New Zealand at that time was 20. So I hadn't even really started drinking yet. I hadn't even barely had a legal drink, so I wasn't about to stop. But I didn't tell people in AA that. I was just going along and saying, I'm down to an alcoholic, and talking about my drinking. And I did actually identify with a lot of what people were saying in the rooms. So I knew that I was similar to the people in the rooms, but I wasn't bad enough. Like, I wasn't as bad as them. They were way worse than me. They had far more problems than me. They had to stop drinking more than I did. I didn't really have to stop. So that was my attitude. And so once I felt as though eyes weren't really on me anymore and I didn't have to impress anybody, I just kind of faded out of AA and just carried on with my life. And I did manage to do normal things like get a job and buy a house and get married and do all these sort of things, like normal type things. But alcohol was at the forefront of everything. Like, I planned my weekends well in advance, and they all centred around drinking events. Anything that was worth doing was worth doing with a drink in my hand. It was like much more fun going to the movies with a few drinks or any sort of social event. If I couldn't drink there, I'd question whether I really needed to be there, if I had to go. And often, like family events especially, that often happen on a Sunday. And I'd have a big night Saturday night and either not turn up at all on Sunday or turn up hungover, grumpy, tired, not really ready to participate in the event, and just really wasn't really a full participant in lots of aspects of my life. Working was a bit of a joke as well. I was pretty pretty bad employee, lazy, and take advantage of things like after-work drinks. And I remember sitting around at an after-work drinks function, and there were some drinks that were put on for us, and there was a certain number of drinks there on the table, and I was sitting there talking to someone, not listening to what they were saying, looking behind them at the drinks, counting up them and the other people that were still there, working out how many drinks I reckon I could get out of, out of how many were left if I was quick enough. So my priority wasn't socialising, it was drinking. And I love getting a drink for free. That was just the best. And then I'd just go out in town and spend as little as possible. Or, by the end of my drinking, even though I had a good job, one particular night I went out and I had no money, nothing. And I had put three bottles of beer in my pocket and went out into town and ended up coming home at 4, 5, 6 in the morning, incredibly drunk. And that was just from stealing drinks and getting other people to buy them for me. So I was sort of doing these things which were not really part of my true nature, but I was doing things because I had to get drunk and any which way possible. But having said that, I was still holding a relationship together, holding a job together, maintaining tenuous family relationships, and generally just sort of living to party, even though I was sort of well into my 30s. And eventually I sort of caught myself at a bit of a weak moment and ended up back in the rooms of AA after a gap of about 16 years. And I rang that 800 number that you mentioned before, Rebecca, on a Sunday morning. I was still a bit drunk, and they answered the phone and gave me information about where the nearest meeting was, which was only 5 minutes' walk from where I was. And so I turned up to that meeting and still drunk, and they asked me to share, and I had a big cry, and I breathed alcohol fumes over everybody, and they said, keep coming back. And so I did, and I have. And sometimes, like especially in the early days, I wasn't sure if I wanted to. I remember walking to work, and the clothes I was wearing a suit, and I knew, I could almost smell the fumes of alcohol on the suit, because the last time I wore it, I was on a big night. And I thought, you know, I could, after work today, I could just go back to the pub and just forget all these things I was beginning to learn about alcoholism, and no one would mind or care, and you know, all very good, but I dragged myself to a meeting instead, you know. So that was what I was doing at the beginning, was just sort of dragging myself to meetings. Or sometimes I was quite excited to go because, like, lots of different meetings, lots of different people to meet. So I quite enjoyed that aspect of it. But, and after a couple of weeks, I was given a sponsor. I was kind of almost like tricked into getting a sponsor by another fellow who was he knows who he is, and I've told him many times that I'm very thankful that he's done that. And so he gave me a sponsor, and me and my new sponsor started working on the steps. And for my view is that, you know, if you really need AA and you need to stop drinking, really, like, there's no time to waste. Really, it's kind of like, well, you can sit around and, you know, come to meetings and try not to drink. And people do that for weeks and months and sometimes even years. And that might work for some people, but for me, I had to get onto the steps pretty quickly. I knew, I'd reluctantly admitted I was an alcoholic, because it was something I never wanted to admit, because it's kind of like admitting defeat that you can't drink anymore, which was, yeah, like, it just basically meant that I was a loser like the rest of yous, which was a very reluctant admission. So I eventually did that and started working on the steps. And, yeah, for me, that was the biggest project of my life, which was working on me. And I kind of thought that, like, oh, once I actually stop drinking, I'll just go back to being the normal, lovable Dan that everyone thinks is awesome. But turns out I had these things called character defects, and they weren't just when I was drunk. I behave badly a lot of the time, drunk or not, as a heavy drinker. And the steps gave me a way to look at those defects and look at my past and the way I'd behaved and start to behave differently and identify ways which I could do things differently, and also go back and say sorry to all the people that I'd hurt in the past and make amends. So it's more than, for me, it's like more than just saying sorry, it's restoring. Like, I mean, you know, I had stolen money off people and I had to go back and say sorry and also pay the money back. It wasn't enough just to say sorry. So that's part of the amends, is actually restoring things back to where they were. And by the time I got to the amends, I didn't want to do it. Whereas when I first came into AA, the first thing I wanted to do was go straight to step 9 and apologise to everybody. But the steps are in order for a reason. Like, you know, you start with step 1 and you eventually work your way through to step 9. So the steps seem to have worked up until now, and my daily maintenance seems to be working at the moment, which is great, which means that I've been sober for quite a number of years, which is fantastic. Not as many as Chelsea and Dave, but still, no, it's not a competition, but still, like, I remember quite a few years ago just realising, well, I've been sober for like 4 years, you know, and it was just like, and I just couldn't, like, 4 years, for someone like me that used to drink not every day, but used to drink pretty much every weekend from when I was, 17 or 18 to when I was 36. So I sort of pretty much half my life, most weekends I was drunk. For me to not drink at all for that amount of time was just incredible. And like, I still can't believe that sometimes that I've not drank for as long as I have. But it's still like, it's a daily program. So I still need to wake up every morning and remind myself that I need to do certain things in the world to make sure that I don't drink, because I'm not like everyone else in the world. I'm an alcoholic, and if I pick up a drink, I'm at risk of losing the great life that I have. I know instantly things would change if I drank. My partner would, the things would be different with me and her. My daughter, access to that would quickly change. Work would go down the gurgler again. I've sort of restored things at work and got a couple of promotions, which has been great. Overall, my life's just better in every single way since I stopped drinking. And for me, there's no reason to go back. I missed it at the beginning, but I don't miss it now. I wouldn't go back to it. And I do everything in my power not to. And there's a few things in the big book of AA that talk about wanting to drink like a normal person. I've seen how normal people drink, right? Which is like having one drink, which might last half an hour or an hour, and just people sip it, and then they might have another one, and they might half finish it, and then go home. That's the way most normal people drink. I thought normal people drinking was the way I used to drink, which is, one after the other until the money ran out, or until I passed out. That's the way I used to think normal drinking was. But I've seen normal drinking now, and even if I could, I wouldn't want it. I wouldn't want to drink like that, For me, it's much better not to drink at all rather than, because I also know that if I did try and drink like one or two drinks in a night or three, it might work once or twice, but it wouldn't work for long. And, I'm privileged to have seen people that had been sober for a while and they go back drinking and they come back. Some of them come back, not many come back. And the ones that do come back, it's like they always say it's worse. Things got worse. They did all these things that they never thought they would do. And they sort of crossed more boundaries and, barriers than they ever thought they would. So for me, I just want to, maintain my sobriety on a daily basis. And part of that is actually doing service. And so that's, giving back and doing things like the radio show and, even doing things like putting away the chairs at the meeting and putting the books out and talking to newcomers, all that stuff. Anyway, I think I've talked for long enough. So, I'll leave it there. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Dan. You're listening to AA On Air on Wellington Access Radio 106.1 FM. My name's Rebecca and I'm an alcoholic. Hi. As always, I have heard so many things to relate to. Right from that magical feeling of alcohol and the way that it was the answer to so many things, and all that awkwardness slipped away, and this is where confidence is, and this is how I can try out all these different hats and explore and be cool. The first time I tried to sort of moderate my drinking, I was 16. And I signed a pledge that I would have no more than 3 standard units of alcohol in any 24-hour period, which was a joke because everybody knows that, what is 3 drinks? From the age of 18, well, the drinking age was still 20, but, when I was 18, I went to uni, there was a bar there. And I drank every day for from that point pretty much every day. Whether I had money or not, I was pretty quickly being blacklisted by the group that I'd sort of tried to hang out with. I was put on a list of people who weren't welcome to drink with them. Alcohol did sort of blight my life from quite an early age. I didn't acquire those things that other people did. I dropped out of uni. I got a job, but it was a job working in a deli. My relationships never worked out. I couldn't maintain it unless, you know, if someone was a drinker and they wanted to hang out and drink with me, then all good. But for the most part, they didn't work. And, you know, over time, things eroded. I had a lot of self-deceit that really, you know, resonates for me. I found myself in the end working in hospitality where it was a perfect camouflage. You know, I remember at one point, you know, I'd say to people, oh, yeah, I work in the wine industry and sometimes I take my work home, you know. it was something that, you know, I could wrap it up and say I'm passionate about wine. it would be more correct to say obsessed. And I was pretty much trashed every day. You know, I had an aunt and uncle who were both alcoholics and very sick with it. And I could say I'm not as bad as them. But people would ask me questions that broke through my defences a bit, like, how did you get that black eye? And why are you shaking? And where's my money? And, you know, those were the things, right? Those were the times when I was like, ooh. You know, I feel really grateful that eventually, you know, my friends stopped talking about me, started talking to me. And someone had a friend who was in AA and he went to meet up with me and talk to me about the program, took me to my first meeting, I'm incredibly lucky that I haven't had a drink since that first meeting, which is not everybody's experience, but, you know, for me it was just keep coming back, go to meetings, and as Dan said earlier, you know, do the service. So, you know, my life today is transformed. I've gained all those things that I missed out on a little bit late, but, you know, I'm making up for lost time. It's great to be here, to be able to be a part of this AA meeting on air. You can tune into Wellington Access Radio 106.1 FM. And that big thank you to the people from As Bill Sees It. Great meeting in Wellington, 5:30 on Wednesday evenings at Toi Poneke in Te Aro. I think we should close the meeting with the Serenity Prayer. How does that sound? God,
grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can,
and wisdom to know the difference. Hey, thanks everybody for tuning in to the AA meeting on air, Wellington Access Radio 106.1 FM. Thanks.
That program was brought to you by Wellington Access Radio. Get your voice heard. Thanks New Zealand On Air for funding accessmedia.nz.